Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual for our Saturday afternoon show on a beautiful day in Chicago. And there are a lot of things going on today that you can listen to and that you can look at. There's a lot of football, as you know, and then there's the World Series game that's going to be played this afternoon. So that there are a lot of things to do, and it's a nice day to get outside. It's really a beautiful, beautiful day in Chicago. Speaking of outside, our guest today has spent a lot of his career outside at Soldier Field and other places, a great football player, and a very dear friend of mine for a long, long time, one of the Bears' all-time greats, Sid Luckman. We have many things to talk about with Sid, and he'll be our guest in just about 1 minute.
You could do it. Try to make easy money. If you get a good voice like Uncle Bob, and you express yourself and you talk,
we're delighted to have Sid Luckman, an old friend of mine of many, many years, a really outstanding football player and an outstanding man, and he's probably got more friends than anybody in Chicago. And we're delighted today to have him here with us at Northwest Federal. You know, I enjoy, and I'm sure you do too, Sid, looking back once in a while and memories, and I always think of that one game that you played in. Was it against Washington?
Yes, it was against the Washington Redskins. I think I'm reading your mind, Bob. We played the Washington Redskins for the World Championship, and strange as it may seem, we beat them 73-0. So I'm sure that's the game you're thinking about, and probably one of the greatest football games ever played by any given team on any given day.
When you analyze a game like that, Sid, as you do as a well-known, a famous football player, it must have happened that everything happened fast and you got all the breaks, right?
Well, you can't possibly win a game like that without things happening quickly, without conceivably receiving every break, because what's so very, very important, Bob, is the great quarterback Sammy Ball, who was probably one of the finest football players that ever played, had four or five interceptions, and that didn't happen very, very often. Plus the fact that every one of our boys was so fired up and so keyed up to win that game, because they had beaten us about a couple of weeks before 7-3. And the strange thing that happened was that George Marshall, the owner of the Washington Redskins, came out in the paper Saturday night before the World Championship game telling everybody that we were crybabies and front runners, because after they had beaten us 7-3, Mr. Hallis was extremely upset. And in no uncertain terms, he let the whole country know about it. So his pep talk before the game, Mr. Hallis's, was on Sunday, right before this exciting World Championship, was around the dressing room. He placed all these stories that George Marshall had written about the Bears being front runners and crybabies. And the strangest and the most amazing thing that ever happened was his pep talk. He said, "I consider you the greatest football team ever assembled. I want you to go out there and prove to the American public that they're as great as I think you are, and I'm sure they'll be convinced after this game that you are. I know that you're not crybabies, and I know that you're not front runners, and let's show Mr. Marshall what can be done." So, Bob, when the score was 56-0, Mr. Hallis didn't want to score any more points because, my God, it was the World Championship, and it was humiliating. So the boys on the team said, "We're going to keep going and show Mr. Marshall that we're a pretty good second-half team." Well, the final result was 73-0, and it doesn't seem possible that you can win a football game by that score.
Sid, there must be a lot to the psychological side of football and every sport.
I think that football is probably the single most psychological football game that there is, because it's an emotional game. It's a game that takes – most of the boys are so tremendous and such fine football players, Bob, that they're almost all equal. They're all 6'5", 6'6", 250, 270. They all have tremendous ability. And emotion plays a terrific part in the success or failure of the team. And that depends upon the coaching staff and upon two or three boys on the team who are inspirational leaders. Football is a sensational game, but you hit the nail on the head. It is so much to do with emotion. It's got to do with personalities. It's got to do with leadership. And that's what brings for great football teams like Coach Hallis. He was the most inspirational leader I've ever known.
Somebody was saying the other day at a luncheon I was at, what would Hallis do if he was coaching today? I think he'd do what he always did.
If Coach Hollis was coaching today, he'd be the number one coach like of this generation, like he was in the generations that he coached, because he never let anything to chance. He was the most humble man. He always believed that the opponents were better than we were. Therefore, we had to work twice as hard as the opponents. There wasn't a day of his life while he was coached that he didn't work 18 to 20 hours a day. His whole life was dedicated to perfection, to complete and total desire to win. Winning was everything. But he did it as only the great gentleman that he was. And Bob, he knew exactly how to tell us how to tie our shoelaces. He knew how to tell us how to do everything. We never left anything to chance and never took a chance that something wasn't going to be done the way it should be done. He just was a guy that was thorough in every analytical way.
What do you feel, how do you feel his philosophies would apply to the game today?
He's the kind of man that loved with a great deal of passion if you were the kind of man that would put out for him. There wasn't a thing he wouldn't do if he cared for you, if he knew that you cared for the Bears, and he knew that football was the primary thing in your life. If he found out over a period of time that you were doing things you weren't supposed to do, like break training, or be late for meetings, or get involved in anything, it would really have turned him off on you. He's the kind of man that would do anything for someone in football who was doing the kind of job that would have made him proud of you. And that's the way he's been in later life with all the boys today, Bob. He is a total immortal living legend and a man that I respect and admire as much as anyone on this earth.
Well, I feel the same way that you do. By the way, all this started for you at Columbia under Lou Little. What do you recall about a few of his philosophies?
Well, Lou Little is sort of a man that stood up very high and tall in my life. I don't like, you know, humbleness is the greatest thing in the world. If you have humbleness, you have everything, and humility. So I tell you this with all the humility that I have, Bob. I was going to the Naval Academy, was accepted to the U.S. Naval Academy, and the Naval Academy was playing Columbia University at Baker Field, and they invited me up to the game. And I went to the game with the Naval Academy people, and I'm not fickle, believe me, I'm not, because I was going to the Naval Academy. And they took me, and Naval Academy won, beat Columbia, and they took me into the dressing room after the game. And I met the Naval Academy people. They were absolutely wonderful. And then they took me in to meet Lou Little. And I knew right then and there that this was the man that I had to live my life and dedicate my life to as far as my football. He was the most articulate. He had a certain charisma, a certain charm, a certain way about him. He had his glasses pinched like Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was dressed as well as any man I've ever known. His voice, his appeal. And I then decided that as much as I loved the Naval Academy, I felt that my career would be, and my football career, and my education would be just as well taken at the Columbia University.
What was the Ivy League like in those days?
The Ivy League then was a little stronger than it is today. The Ivy League is a tough situation, Bob, being that you have to have such good grades. They don't take you because of your football ability. They don't take you because you're an athlete. They take you because you have to have a certain sense of reality as far as your marks. And you have to have them in the upper 30 of graduating class and have certain credits and take the Thorndike intelligence test. So Ivy League football, I don't think, will ever be the caliber of the other football in the United States, like, you know, the Pacific Coast or the Southeast or South. And I have casting no aspersions upon their athletic, facilities or educational facilities. But I think the Ivy League has got a long way to go. And I always think that the predominating teams will be the teams with the bigger men and the men who are finer football players.
You know, a lot of people know Notre Dame football factory, but that isn't true. I know that scholastically they're as tough as any school in the country.
Bob, I coached at Notre Dame for 5 years, as you know, in spring training with Frank Leahy. And everybody that's down there has to go to class. They have to pass their grades. Excuse me. And if they don't, Bob, they're not going to stay at Notre Dame. And the strange thing about it is 95% of all the athletes who partake in athletics and football and all other sports at Notre Dame graduate from Notre Dame. And you can't say that about all the colleges in the United States today, which is a tremendous record. And, of course, I'm favored towards Notre Dame because of my fine relationship there and having coached there. It was a very exciting and thrilling time of my life.
Did Leahy follow in the footsteps of Rockne?
Absolutely. Leahy played for Rockne. Leahy broke his leg in his senior year, and Rockne put him on as a coaching staff. And he had all of Rockne's psychological implications, his impact. He also had some tremendous football knowledge. He was like the younger George Halas. In other words, he left absolutely nothing to chance, Bob. He just did it the way it should be done, and he was an outstanding, sensational college coach. And it's a shame he decided to retire when he did, because football lost a lot when he did left, and also lost a lot when Lombardi left the football scene because of that horrible illness.
Yes. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is an old friend and an all-time football great, Sid Luckman. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. We're delighted to have Sid Luckman, all-time football great, as our guest today. It all started at Columbia University under Lou Little, where he was an All-American football player, and then he was an All-Pro and the program, and a great, great credit to football. Those were some great days, Sid, when you were actively playing.
Bob, those were the most wonderful days in the Chicago Bear history. We had a football team that was dedicated to win. They were dedicated to Coach Halas. They were dedicated to the Chicago Bears. And it was one for all and all for one. And as you know, they have those old alumni meetings every year when all the fellows come back.
We got one tomorrow.
We got one tomorrow, right? And that's going to be a sensational thing. You see all the boys who are in the Hall of Fame. You see Nagurski and Grange and McAfee and Turner and Osmansky. You go on and on and on. And the Gallinos. And you can just keep going because these are the boys that made Chicago Bear history. I'm sure that as time goes on, that the Chicago Bears will come back to become a dynasty again. They are the monsters of the Midway. They were the monsters of the Midway. And under Jim Fink's leadership and under the Armstrong and what's going on, I'm sure that there will be a change and a great recovery. And, in fact, I expect tomorrow, Bob, that they're going to give Detroit one tremendous game.
I have a feeling that they will, too. Detroit will be here at Chicago tomorrow, remember, at Soldier Field. Sid, did the accent on forward passing in the pro game come in your time?
Yes, it did. When I started back with the Bears, forward passing was was something that we just didn't do very much of, Bob. Today, forward passing has changed, and we were the ones, really, when I say we, meaning Coach Halas, that changed the offense. He spread the ends. He sent men in motion. He designed pass patterns, and he then knew that the game had to be opened up. So it would have more spectacular appeal to the spectator, and also the game itself had to be opened up because there were so many outstanding football players coming into professional football. So the impact of passing really changed the game and made it the great game that it is today. And that was Coach Halas. My first 4 or 5 years, we didn't do too much of it. But in the latter part of my career, we started to open up, and football then became what it is today.
What about the Chicago Cardinals with the T and the shift?
Yes, they had a great team. As you know, the T formation was really the Halas formation. He started it. He was the only one that ever used the T formation, and that's when he sent me out to Notre Dame and West Point and Holy Cross and Columbia and Pittsburgh to help them install the T formation, because we were the only team, and he felt that everyone, and for the betterment of football and unselfishly, that was what his gain was, and that's why he sent me around. You picked his brain, of course, not mine. And by picking his brain and passing it on to the other coaches, that's why the Cardinals and all the other teams in football used the T. It was Halas's innovations.
Now today, the Notre Dame is going to play Army. That's been a great relationship, hasn't it?
Yes, it was strange for me, Bob, because back there in 46, when they played that great century game, the Battle of the Century, with Lou Jack and Connors and Ziggy Zarowski against Blanchard and Davis, and that team coached by Blake and coached by, I had coached both those squads. So I had mixed emotions about the game, and I really thought that Notre Dame would win decisively, but it did end up in 0-0, one of the greatest football games ever played. It was played at the Yankee Stadium in New York. And I'm glad it ended that way, because it was a good feeling for me to see them both tie, as much as I sort of felt that Notre Dame was a superior team at the time.
You mentioned Ziggy. He's going to be here next Saturday.
Oh, Ziggy's a great guy and a good friend and a tremendous personality, and he can tell you some wonderful football stories, as you well know.
Oh, boy. Yes, he really can. As you look at the game today, and I'm sure you follow the college game on Saturday and the pro games on Sunday, what's different about it?
Well, the only difference is you can see the boys, the men. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster. They're just better athletes. They're better coached. They've been watching TV since they've been young fellas. In our youth, we never had that luxury. We had to work during the day and all that. These boys have all that, you know, the junior leagues and the all the leagues they're involved in. So I think that's the major part. Plus, they're so much bigger, and everything that's ever been done has been broken. I can remember when I was a young fellow watching Pavel Nurmi run that mile in 4:33, 4 minutes and 33 seconds. Not so long ago, five men ran it better than 3:58. So I say the whole world and all of the sports world has changed. And as you can see, the sports today, as we know it, is far superior to the sports, and football is far superior, as is every other sport. And 10 years from today, it'll be that much better because the men are such finer athletes and such better conditioned athletes and such better coached athletes. And the vitamins and the proteins and everything else and the build-up they give them, of course, help immeasurably.
Well, they certainly do. What about the present Chicago Bears?
I think they got a fine football team. It's a shame that they haven't been successful heretofore. The record hasn't been as good as they really are. They've got some wonderful athletes. I think they have as good a team as there is in the league. I think their problem is that they just haven't gelled together. They haven't worked like they could work, Bob. And I'm sure that before the season is over, that Neil Armstrong and Jim Finks and the coaching staff and the players will get together. In fact, I'm looking forward to seeing it tomorrow. Scott is in perfect shape. For the first time, Ricky Watts is in good shape. Evans is going to play. He's a very exciting, tremendous athlete. And all told, I expect for the rest of the season you'll see the Bears coming back stronger than ever. They're even liable to get into the Super Bowl. That's how good they could be if once they make up their mind to motivate themselves.
What about the problem with Phipps? He's been around a long time. Don't they run a progress chart on a quarterback?
I'm sure they do like they do at baseball pitches, Bob, like you've done all of your life watching him. I'm sure they do, and I think that's the reason he just had a bad year. So he ended up in the blaze of glory last year, so they depended upon him as being their number one quarterback. But on their charts that we're talking about, I guess he hasn't performed, and he himself said he thought it was time to be replaced in the newspapers this week. So the coaches have taken a good look at it, and they're going to go with Evans, and hoping that Evans can turn this thing around. The quarterback is so important, Bob, in professional football.
When you were quarterbacking under Halas, did you like to have the plays sent in, or did you like to call them? And what percentage of plays did you call yourself?
Bob, when I played, it was a little bit different. I don't like to talk again about myself, but we played offense and defense. And you weren't allowed to send plays in. If you send a play in through to a trainer, it was a 15-yard penalty. So we had to call our own plays. So we had to study day and night to learn the plays. And I think the quarterback gets a better feel for the game when he's calling his own plays. I think it's decidedly against the best interest of the quarterback and the team to have the coach call. Even though he may know the situation, I still think it's much better for quarterback to understand all the fundamentals. By calling his own play, he can read the defenses better. He has a better analysis of what's going on and a better idea of what the situations are. And
he can set up a sequence.
Of course, set up sequences by calling short passes and long passes, whatever necessary. But Bob, I want to say, I know we're going to be leaving the air soon. It's always a privilege and honor for me to be with you. When coming to Chicago, and I did, you were one of the outstanding men in this town, not only in the world of radio, but in the world of character and integrity and honor. And for me to sit here across the desk from you is one of my great honors, because I've always looked upon Bob Elson as being the premier sports announcer and one of the finest friends I have in Chicago.
Well, I feel the same way about you, and I'd like to take these two kids home with me.
Okay, Bob. These are the two most wonderful boys I have. I love them, and they're my best friends, and they're here today to watch us. And
how old are they?
One is 5, and the other is 10, and they're 11. One's a football player, and both of them are hockey players, and they're interested in sports, Bob, and they're interested in doing what's right. They're not interested in drugs and smoking. That doesn't enter their minds. They're two of the finest boys I know. They study hard, and they go to the Sunday school, and they're boys, and I'm proud to say that they're part of my life.
Well, that's great, and they certainly look the part. And maybe one of them will be a famous football player like you were.
Bob, whether they're famous or not is not important. What the important thing is that they grow up to be men of integrity, men of character, and men that they can look themselves in the face and say, I'm proud of what I've accomplished in my life. And that's what counts.
That is exactly what counts. By the way, what about a guess on tomorrow's score?
Bob, I'm Ted, I'm very high. Even though the Detroit has won 5 and lost 1, I sincerely believe even they've got a tremendous runner in Sims and a terrific quarterback. I think, I really do. I'd be very surprised if the Bears don't beat them tomorrow. And I haven't been one that's prognosticated the Bear victories because I haven't been that high on them. Not because they're not a great team, because they haven't gelled. But I think this is the start of a new regime and a new fear, and I think the Bears are going to win decisively.
Well, that's good. Sid, thanks so much for being with.
Thank you, Bob. And I just want to, when this is over, Bob, let's interview these two boys.
Our guest today has been Sid Luckman, an all-time great football player, and one of the all-time great Bears and an old friend. We've enjoyed very, very much having him as a guest here at Northwest Federal. Now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Saturday at our usual time.
Hold it.
Sid has a couple of very, very nice boys here with him. One's a blonde, the other one's dark. What's your name?
Craig.
Yeah, how old are you?
5.
5? Well, are you going to be a football player like your uncle?
No.
Why?
I don't know.
What do you want to be? Huh?
Hockey.
Hockey player?
Yeah.
To ask him, who's George Halas?
No.
Who is George Halas?
I'm not.
What about you? What about you? Do you play sports at all?
Yeah, I play football in the Little Giants.
Oh. Where is that? In the suburbs?
No, in Highland Park.
Yeah, that's in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's good. How often do you play?
3 times a week.
3 times a week?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a lot. You take a belting around?
Yeah.
Our guest today is Tony Zale, the former middleweight champion of the world. He fought some great fights, and he fought in a time when the fight game was really something. As you look back on the great fights that you had, what do you recall about a few of them?
Well, some of them I can't help but remember because they gave me a rough time all the way around. And as I said before, the most outstanding of them is Al Hostak, whom you know very well about. And then, of course, there's a fellow named Steve Amekis, who gave me a very tough argument in 14 rounds. So all in all, fighters that era had experience galore. As a matter of fact, before I turned professional, I had at least 200 amateur fights. I experienced galore, I had the background. Nowadays, the boys of today have very little experience. And they wind up on top, making a lot of money. Just a difference of time, that's all. But I appreciate the fact that I was able to attain my goal. I appreciate the fact that I had support from Chicago all the way through. And, of course, I'm happy.
Yes. Tony, what is the most vulnerable spot to knock a man out? Is it the chin or the body?
Well, most vulnerable spot is any spot you hit where you'll be effective. You can knock a man out with the body, you can knock him out to his chin. But I think a punch to the chin will knock him out sooner because it's more effective. Due to the fact that a body punch will kind of weaken him or so. Punch to the chin, the right kind of punch to the chin will knock him senseless. So all in all, regardless of what happens, you hit him the right way with the right time, no matter if it's the body or the head, chin. Either way, the effects will show up, will be out.
What about the fight game today? Do you probably get a chance to see some of the fights that are on television?
Well,
some of these fellows impress you at all?
Bob, I haven't seen too many. It's anything too impressive. Of course, the same story. Lack of experience. Experience is the best teacher, and it's not there enough anymore. When I boxed amateur back in the early 30s in Chicago, they used to have 8 to 10 shows in the city of Chicago itself. They used to have shows around surrounding cities as well. But since the war and so forth, things just fallen away so that boxing is at a very low ebb. And the fights of the day, I don't know, I just can't trust them anymore.
Were you ever on the same card with Dempsey?
Oh, no, I'm much younger than him.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I don't mean that you were to fight him. You're different weights.
Okay, Bob. Dempsey and I were at a show in Chicago, in Milwaukee. I boxed a fellow named Billy Pryor. Jack Dempsey was a referee back in 1941, I think it was. We boxed in the outdoor park in Milwaukee. And we drew the largest crowd to ever see a fight, an estimated 135,000 people. And I knocked the fellow out in 6 rounds, I think. And, of course, Dempsey was a referee.
Did you ever see Dempsey fight?
On film, yes. Other than that, no, I was too young.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I saw that great fight he had here at Soldier Field in Chicago. The long count.
Yeah, well, I saw the films of that. They're not too good at that time because they did not have experience enough in photography of fights. But I could get a good idea of what he fought like. And I probably had to use the same punches he used, too. I did, I'm sure.
Tony, have you ever thought, with all the experience you've had and the background you've had in the fight game, that you might bring up a fighter of your own and put him in the game?
Bob, yes, it's something any ex-fighter looks forward to. But up to date, I haven't seen anything too worthwhile. Years ago, I had a boy at CYO. I coached at CYO. Fellow very good, could box everything else. Smart, punch hard and everything else. Good head, that box, thinking head. One day he says to me, Tony, I'd like to be a professional, would you manage me? I was very elated. I said, sure. I said, look, I'll measure my condition. He said, what is it? I said, leave the girls alone. He couldn't do it, so I said, that's it. I thought one of these days you'll come back, he'll admit you're wrong. He did it about 5, 8 years later because of the CYO. I said, hello, Tony. I said, hello, how are you? He says, fine. I said, Jackie, what are you doing nowadays? He says, Tony, I just lost my job. Look for a job now. I said, what's happening? He says, Tony says, you know, I see these fighters on TV. Golly, what I could do. I said, how old are you now? He says, 29. I said, you're too late. He said, Tony, you were right. You advised me the right way. I didn't take advantage of it. What consolation I get out of my coaching and CYO and everything else, practicing and all, is that the boys come back, they attain a big goal. And they claim boxing has helped them a lot in that regard. As a matter of fact, there are boys who I advise to go to college and so forth. One fellow is a professor in college. And I got a letter the other day from a fellow in South America. Got a big job there with youth. And they give me the credit for their success. And I'm happy to know it. I'm happy to know they're successful because of me. And it gives me a satisfaction, self-satisfaction. Which is good to have.
You remember Bishop Scheel?
Too well. Wonderful, wonderful person all the way around. All the way around, wonderful. He advised me the right way in most things. As far as literally is concerned, as far as life is concerned. And I appreciated it.
Did he have a natural interest in the fight game?
As far as I know, yes. As a matter of fact, I just heard that he had ideas back then, even when he was a young boy too, boxing wise, but he had the right to kind of calling the other side, the other way. Wonderful person, wonderful man. I'm sure he's a saint.
Yes, he was he really was a great man. Well, today there aren't too many fighters of your stature on the scene.
Bob, as I said before, it's the same old story. The boys don't care to sacrifice. Lack of sacrifice is the main trouble all the way around.
Is the CYO still going?
Yes, it is. It's at a low level, of course, but it's still going. And I hope it could, I wish it could be better than it is, but the times are a big factor all the way around. And when I coached there, where I taught the boys to live right in order to be successful. And it paid off. Many boys attained a big success by getting education and everything else and getting up higher in life. Yeah. So all in all, I'm satisfied with that because it does a world of good. Has done.
Well, you look like the fight game has agreed with you.
Well, I can't complain. I'm in good shape all the way around. I work out, keep active. I want to stay young. That's why. That helps a lot. Get that blood circulating, you know, you're feeling alive all the more.
Well, you look great, and lots of luck to you, Tony.
Thank you, Bob, all the way around.
Pleasure seeing you. Thank you. Our guest today, one of the former great fighters, middleweight champion of the world, Tony Zale. Now, this is Bob Elson. Have a nice day, and we'll be talking with you next Saturday at the same time.